That's okay. Okay, welcome to the December meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board. For the roll call, let the record show that all members are present. I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Are there any corrections or additions?
I didn't see anything wrong with it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. Oral communications. Members of the audience that wish to say something to the board that is not on the agenda, that is also city business, please come forward, state your name, and give your spiel. Very well. I have one little thing that I'd like to say. After the end of this meeting, I will have been on board the Harbor Board for 16 years. And my term is up at the end of this meeting, and I do not plan to apply. I'd like to take this opportunity to say how much I do appreciate the people that I've worked with in this board and in the previous boards as well. I'd also like to say that I really thank the staff, Rick, Sue, and Polly, for all their work, and I really do appreciate them, and I like to think of them as my friend, and I hope you will consider me as yours. Also like to thank the city, the city council, for appointing me all those times. And I'd like to give a big kudo to our the harbor patrolmen and women. These people are really awesome. They do a fantastic job. And they put it on the line every day. So with that, I won't go any further except to say thank you all very much for 16 years, and I'll see you around. At this point, I thank you. I guess at this point I would get on my horse and ride off into the sunset, but the sun is already set, and I don't have a horse, so we also have a meeting we have to go through, so we'll move on to the first item on the action items, unless we have anybody else that would like to say something. No. The presentation of the Clean Marina Certification. And, Rick, would you help us?
Yes, thank you. I guess I have to comment, too, that I do appreciate the many years of your service and support personally and to the department of the year, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also, I hope a little practical note here, that will be a vacant recreational boating seat. We have a few recreational boating interest folks in the sitting in the audience tonight, so they might consider that there apparently will be an opening on the Harbor Advisory Board. Our presentation tonight is going to be relatively quick from our Chief Harbor Patrol Officer, Eric Endersby. He has worked on this program as president of the California Harbor Masters Association, which is quite a distinction for Little Morro Bay to have a president of a statewide association of all the ports and harbors on the coast. Over this last year, he was a driver in having Morro Bay be an example in their annual conference on the Clean Marina Certification Program. We passed the test, but I'm stealing his thunder. So, Eric, come up and make your presentation.
Congratulations, Don.
Thank you.
16 years, man. It makes you a fixture, doesn't it? So I guess no good deed goes unpunished, so Rick invited me up here to speak about this. I'll go through a little quick history. Hopefully I won't bore anybody too much. But the Clean Marina Program in general developed in the late 1990s as a part of a function of the Coastal Commission, California Coastal Commission. They looked at boaters and boating and decided that it was a source of pollution and a source of possible regulatory action, and they started looking at, you know, what boaters do and what marinas do to the environment, both from a pollution standpoint and from a keeping everything clean standpoint, in the terms of best management practices. So Coastal Commission in 1999, with a lot of stakeholder input, started developing the Clean Marina program for California. It got pretty onerous. It got pretty well developed. The California Harbor Masters Association was deeply involved in it. The end product, they were not terribly happy supporting because it was very high on regulation and very heavy-handed, and it was pretty onerous. And at that point, San Diego was under the gun. Shelter Island Marine in San Diego was under the gun for some water quality problems they had there from the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And portions of the Coastal Commission's output, which was the California Clean Marina Toolkit, were starting to sneak into permits and regulatory actions, in that it was guaranteed from the get-go that this wasn't going to be a mandatory regulatory toolkit. It was going to be something that the industry could comply with voluntarily. Well, when it started to sneak into regulatory permitting actions, some of the flags started to go up in the industry, and San Diego was the first one at the forefront there, and they started developing their own. They went to the Regional Water Quality Control Board in San Diego and said, if we develop our own industry-driven best management practices and comply with a certification program, will the regional board go for it? And the board said, well, show us what you're talking about, and we'll go from there. And they, over a couple of years in the early 2000s, developed the Clean Marinas San Diego program, which consisted of an industry-driven, a self-regulating, self-inspecting program that they started out in Shelter Island Marina and then took it region-wide in San Diego, and the regional board signed off on it and said, okay, if you guys are going to comply with this, we're going to not look so closely at some of the regulatory things that the Coastal Commission was looking at. And it worked out very well. Well, nobody was too happy with the Coastal Commission's toolkit, Harbor Masters Association included, and we all started looking to San Diego to say, hey, can we use yours? And San Diego said, sure, here's ours. Take it. Do what you want with it. San Diego subsequently spearheaded the Clean Marinas California program, taking San Diego's model and making it go statewide through a couple other associations and carried it statewide. Our association, Harbor Masters, and subsequently our city, bought into that program, said that looks great. It's basically consists of, and I should know this by heart, but about 15 different areas of best management practices. The purposes and goals are encouraging marinas and yacht clubs in California to meet best management practices in order to prevent or reduce pollution in coastal waters. The program provides a checklist of best management practices that a marina or facility, you know, we're not City of Morro Bay, we're not a marina per se, but we're a city facility that can comply with these things. There's a number of mandatory areas that you have to meet, things that are basically mandated by law, no discharges and treating certain effluents and coastal runoff, emergencies, petroleum containment, boat maintenance, underwater bolt hole cleaning, marina operations, marina debris, boat sewage discharge, solid waste, liquid waste, fish waste, hazardous materials, up to 15 yet, and stormwater runoff. Mandatory items, obviously, you have to comply with 100%. The optional items, or the other points, are a 60% compliance, and that's this about documents evolving. Eventually, I think they're going to up that to more, probably in the 70 to 75% range, which is kind of typically your C grade anyhow. 60% was fair. It wasn't easy to make, but it definitely wasn't as difficult as it could have been. There's a lot of stuff that just boaters and marinas and harbors comply with just because that's what we do and that's what the business we're in and that's the best thing to do anyhow. So a lot of the stuff was fairly easy, but it was a lot of documentation, had to have a lot of ducks in a row and I's dotted and T's crossed. The certification itself, again, it's an industry-driven, industry-led self-inspection program. The Clean Marinas California program certifies inspectors to go in three-man teams and go do different harbors and marinas. As Rick mentioned, I did it during our Harbor Masters annual conference here in October, and I had three inspectors come. And once you sit through a number of inspections, at some point you get your badge, and you know, you don't really get a badge, but you're qualified to go out on and lead your own team, and eventually enough people will get certified to be inspectors to where myself and possibly Casey from Port St. Louis and maybe Mick Crowman from Santa Barbara can go in our area and start certifying marinas and harbors in our area. And eventually the goal is to, you know, get everybody in the state on board. The California Clean Marinas program, so far, I think their goal is to get 50 certified marinas and/or harbors by the end of the year. They're already over that, I believe. So they're doing really well. It's gotten great buy-in. It's really stuff that we should be doing and stuff that we are doing. We knew from the get-go that, you know, the source of pollution in and around the coastal harbors and bays isn't coming primarily from boaters. There's a lot of runoff. There's a lot of upland issues. There's a lot of stuff that's out of our control. And the Coastal Commission's program was really starting to hold marinas responsible for what was coming down the watersheds to the nth degree, to where it was going to become just absolutely cost prohibitive and onerous to deal with. So this program turned out to be much more conducive to, but it was a lot of work. I knew I'd get there. It was just putting the whole manual together and putting the book together. That was kind of the hard part. So guys got any questions?
And the steps that you've taken over the years to set up the oily waste, the waste oil recycling center, all the other practices that we had already been putting in place, too, so I don't know that you give yourself enough credit. And where this will work now, as Associated Pacific, for example, is sitting here, and now we have a book that we can share with our employees and a manual for them to go over specific to best management practices and their daily duties, which most of these things, obviously, we've been working on anyway, but it's all in writing now. Eventually, as we absorb that, then we start talking to the other marina operators, Associated Pacific being the largest one, but there's small ones, and we start, you know, sharing these with them and letting them know that this is the practices, so almost all of which are followed, in our opinion anyway, because we sort of provide the umbrella services anyway. But, you know, the information filters down, and hopefully we get these practices followed and throughout the harbor.
So thanks for having me.
Yeah, I understand then these practices will be then, they'll filter on down to like the Yacht Club and to Associated Divers or Associated Pacific.
Yeah, that's the hope. I mean, as Rick says, you know, we're kind of, in our harbor, we're a little unique in that along the coast where you go to like Marina Del Rey or even Santa Barbara where, you know, 1,000 slip facility, 10,000, 15,000 slip facility, where individual marinas that operate, you know, 6,000-7,000 boats can comply with all this stuff. We, being Little Morro Bay, it comes down on the city to really cover the umbrella stuff, like the Yacht Club. I wouldn't expect, you know, it wouldn't be expected that the Yacht Club would facility, you know, here's the contact information and here's how you get here. That's what you need to do. You fulfilled your goal for providing that service, and then you get covered by that.
Okay, thank you. Anybody questions? Jim?
The topics in that are contained in that, are they going to be available for distribution to the marina operators or to the Yacht Club or to other interested parties?
Yes to all of the above. It's already online. You can go to cleanmarinascalifornia.org and get the full inspection sheet, all of the information that they have, all, basically the whole manual. You can get that online. If you folks wanted it, I could easily copy parts of it for you, all of it for you. I've got it in my office, and I've got our manual for Morro Bay, and then I've got the generic manual as well. So, yeah, it's out there and pretty widely distributed.
And obviously we need to execute an outreach strategy now, and this is sort of the first step in that, to share this information more publicly. And, you know, over the next year or two, we'll be working out how we – I don't know that every little marina is going to want a book. Many may want it just in electronic form, and we'll just try to, you know, help people get the information and decide how they want to disseminate and use it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and congratulations.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Moving on to the next one, State Park Marina Update, and will you introduce that, please, Rick?
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, Chris, you want to just – looks like you're ready to fire off. Maybe I'll let you start. That sounds good. So I think for the public that Chris, the handout that the Harbor Advisory Board got is going to be shown on the screen.
Yeah, that's correct, Rick. The slides that the board members got are exactly the same. Good evening, board members. Glad to be here. Chris Vardis with Potter Associates Incorporated. It's been quite a while since I last gave an update on the project. We've accomplished a number of things, and I want to take the opportunity to give an overview of those accomplishments. But before I do that, I want to give a little background. this environmental impact report slash environmental impact statement that we're preparing pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act and the National Environmental Policy Act. It is a typical environmental review document, but it's also more of that. It's also a feasibility analysis, looking at the feasibility of how to dredge the material, looking at the feasibility of where we're going to put that material, and a lot of effort into coordination with the United States Environmental Protection Agency as well as the Army Corps of Engineers, who are going to have a large responsible agency authority over this project, and get feedback from them and really engage them into the project as project team members and try to identify and disclose issues associated with the project early on so that down the road when the document doesn't, when it goes out for public review and we get comments back from the public and from responsible agencies, including those two agencies, the city is not confronted with a number of surprises. Statements, why don't you look at this, why don't you look at that? The idea is that when we go through the public review process, we have a pretty good idea of what the issues are. Today is the options that are on the table for disposal or placement of the dredge materials, as well as a discussion of a phase two sediment sampling analysis that we had to undertake, which was the second phase to a first phase that was completed about a year ago. We want to talk about a tidal hydrology and sedimentation analysis that was completed by one of our sub-consultants, Philip Williams and Associates, which has done a lot of work in the Morro Bay estuary for the estuary program as well as other entities. Talk about some preliminary recommendations for the design of the marina and then give an overview of where we are exactly with the EIR, EIS, and talk about next steps. And please jump in if you have any questions during the presentation. Please don't hesitate to ask those questions. Currently, the way the EIR is structured, it's going to address three different alternatives, and those alternatives are based on different dredge steps. Those alternatives are a minus 8, minus 10, and a minus 12 mean low water. In addition, the alternatives or options for disposal, we've narrowed it down to three different options. That is the nearshore disposal site, which is about a mile south of the marina entrance. It's a place where the Corps of Engineers places dredge material from when they dredge the entrance channel. That's one option. The second one is Cold Canyon Landfill off of 227, and the third one is Chicago Grade Landfill. Kind of embedded in this are potential beneficial reuse projects collaborating with large construction projects that might be undertaken, and there's an opportunity, while it's not fully divulged at this point, that some of that material can be used by one of those entities, which would create a win-win situation for both the city and that project proponent. Disposal options, we looked at a number of different hauling distance. However, based on our assessment, each of those can only receive about 5,000 to 10,000 cubic yards of material. Furthermore, there would be extensive earthwork and containment berms that would have to be constructed to contain the material and prevent it from sloughing off and eroding and depositing into the back bay, which would be a big issue. We also looked at two mine sites on Camp San Luis Obispo property. These two sites are north of Highway 1, north actually of the Men's Colony facility. One of them is a really neat pit, old chromite mine. We assessed that it could receive about 30,000 cubic yards of material. And the way it's in its current situation, it's a big pit lined with rock. It would be a great spot to put the material. It wouldn't go anywhere, and there wouldn't be a substantial amount of improvements are required. Improvements would be required. The other site is a Trinidad mine site. It's further north uphill from the facility or from the Primera mine site, and that one could probably receive maybe 50 to 75,000 cubic yards. But this one, again, like the quarry sites, you would have to build a large containment berm to keep the material from sloughing up and depositing into the watershed, which would ultimately end up in Chorro Creek. The other big issue with these is that, oh boy, there's about a 6-mile-long, unimproved access road, very steep slopes that you would have to drive these haul trucks up to deposit the material. And the hauling cost associated with that, plus the road improvements, just deem them not to be feasible, unfortunately. We also looked at a minor ranch facility. It's a minor ranch off of Chorro Creek Road or Highway 1, right next to San Bernardino Creek. These fields, they're prime farmland, and so there's the issue of place the material on top of the prime farmland, you'd probably have to remove some of the topsoil, which is class 1 soils and class 2, stockpile, place the dredge material spoils on that, and then backfill. So there's a cost associated with that, plus just the notion of placing the material in that watershed, potential for it to slough off into Choro Creek. That's an issue. Thirdly, there's a conservation easement on that property with the Bay Foundation and the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. So there's that whole consistency issue that would have to be further addressed, and at this point it just doesn't look that promising. LA 2 off the coast of Santa Monica, it's approved offshore site, but the hauling costs to take the material down there is cost prohibitive. The last three options, Coal Canyon Landfill, Chicago Gray Landfill, those are permitted facilities. They've already gone through environmental review for receiving various types of material. Very minimal impact. In fact, those operators possibly could use some of this dredge spoil as cover material for daily cover. So there's a win-win situation for the landfill operators. There is a hauling cost component, maybe a tonnage fee that would be assessed as well. But relatively, from a permitting perspective, looks pretty good. The other one is the nearshore disposal site. And that one, actually, I have some pictures of the quarry sites. You can see those two orange dots. Those are the two quarry sites. And then we have the mine sites off of Highway 1. And then the minor ranch properties, these are the two facilities. You can see the two polygons denoted in black. You can see Choro Creek Road or Highway 1 just to the south. And then the Coal Canyon Landfill, that we're looking at between 75 to 100,000 cubic yards of material.
Okay, thank you.
The nearshore disposal site, it's close. We'd probably use Scout to get the material there. The problem is that the U.S. EPA, they have a rule about, or policy about, placing materials that are fine in the nearshore zone. And we're going to get into the composition of the dredge sediments, but it's relatively high in fines, and we'd have difficulty in getting approval to place the material at this location. And actually, this whole issue with the nearshore disposal site was an impetus for the Phase 2 sediment sampling analysis that we did. When we did the first phase of that analysis, we took six samples from six different locations using a vibrocore. And we went down maybe minus 12, minus 13 mean low water. And then we took all this, each core, and we composited it into one sample. And we archived one we tested for a chemical, and the other one we tested for particle grain size. And the results of that analysis were that material is relatively clean, maybe elevated level, minor elevation level, elevated levels of chromite and nickel, or chromium and nickel, but clean. But the material is high in fines. So then we had some further discussions with US EPA and the Corps, and they said, well, what about the idea of taking some of the material and putting it in the nearshore site, taking some of the material and putting it at Coal Canyon Landfill, and maybe some of the other material at another site for beneficial reuse, based on the physical composition of that material? And so the difficulty of that is that we had to go back and resamplify significant horizons, i.e. change in the physical composition of the material. And so we did that with the idea that if we have this sort of cross-sections of the composition of the material, that any given location within the marina that we dredge or any depth, we should know relatively with good confidence or high confidence what the percentage of fine or coarse material would be, a good percentage of that composition. So we went back and we did the second round of sediment sampling and analysis. We also had divers, and this map shows the locations of the six sampling stations. Starting off from the western portion of the marina all the way to the back. We also had divers go out to the nearshore disposal site, the slide I showed you previously. And they collected samples from the one portion, which is about 25 feet deep, and the other site, or on the other boundary, was about 40 feet. And we had the six samples run through the same physical analysis, as well as the two nearshore samples that were run through the two analyses, with the idea or the objective is to come up with a comparative analysis. and determine the compatibility of the marina sediments to the nearshore zone. And this big table here lists all of the samples that were collected. You have Station 1 through Station 6, and then the nearshore disposal site 1 and 2. And it breaks up the subsamples by the horizon. So we have Station 1, 1, which is... And this table here lists the chemical results. And the last two columns present the average as well as the composite from the previous sediment sampling that was done. Not much change, still clean, relatively clean. Minor elevations in chromium and nickel. So at this point we had a pretty good understanding of what the chemical and physical composition of the sediments are. Do you have any questions, Rick, or fun so far?
No, I might give a C to the PANS analysis before you move on to that. Is that really, I think, where we are with our disposal sites, and help me, Chris, if I'm wrong, but we have done a lot of work trying to define, obviously the disposal was the big question. We all knew it going in. I had a lot of hope that we might find a site near upland that would be relatively close. We exhausted that, and really, no joy. We then focused on the nearshore site, spent a lot of time working on it. EPA tried to help us, I think really did. They showed some flexibility in indicating that, you know, they would allow maybe between 50 and 70% sand, but it had to be, as it turned out, the silts are really at least 30, 40, 50% in almost all the locations. And really what they told us was the best we could hope for would be to do a small demonstration project, putting that material in the nearshore site and seeing what happened, doing a lot of studies, probably a demonstration project on the order of, you know, 5 to 10,000 yards at most for a first incident, then seeing what happened. And that starts to look like not being a problem. And that will be probably, as we go forward, the recommended solution. Now, I think what Chris hinted at, too, is that there could be, I think all parties agree that a beneficial reuse on a potential construction site or other site where a property owner, say, was willing and even anxious to have the material would be a better solution. And we think that the way we can write this in such a way is that as we were to actually get close, say, within the year of actually doing the dredging, we could, with an amendment, because we'll have the traffic and transportation of the trucking handled for most of the routes out of the area, possibly do shift to a site other than disposal site if we had a willing property owner. How did I do with that?
I think, Dick Wright, I just wanted to follow up on a couple points. First, if following certification of the EIR, EIS, a new site is identified, it's a beneficial reuse opportunity, and that location is closer than either Cole County Landfill or Chicago Gray Landfill, that's a good thing. Because the objective or the task always at hand when preparing these documents and assessing the impacts is to assess based on a worst-case scenario. So if we can identify a location for a beneficial reuse opportunity that's closer than Chicago Gray Landfill or the other landfill, then the impacts to either transportation or circulation and most importantly, air quality are going to be less. And that's a good thing. The other thing as far as nearshore disposal site, you know, that concept was a piggyback from the strides that have been accomplished by the Santa Cruz Port District, in which they have been doing some demonstration projects placing 50-50 material, 50% in the nearshore zone is going to cover the organisms and cause turbidity and other water quality and secondary effects to biological resources. And so one of the things that we did is we did a desktop study of the nearshore zone, and we looked at the physical processes within that area as well as the sterile bay, and we also looked at the biological resources based on existing information. And our assessment, our conclusion is we don't think that there's going to be a detrimental effect. The same thing's going to happen as what took place in Santa Cruz Port District, that the fines are going to move out off for it into deeper waters, and that the sands are going to replenish the beaches. And we were pretty optimistic about this, and we presented it to the agencies, and their response is, well, prove it. So they would want the pre, during, post-project monitoring, which is going to cost a lot of money. And what's the reward?
Chris, they won't allow us to use the data from Santa Cruz?
We have the data from Santa Cruz, and we succinctly summarized that data as well as we summarized the literature review that we did, both of the physical processes, sediment transport, things like that, currents, and the biological resources, the substrate, the hard bottom habitat where it's non-existent. And
they didn't buy it.
They didn't buy it.
Okay.
So the next step is we focused on the physical processes within the marina. And Phil Plums and Associates.
Roger, I think, has a question or two.
On the Santa Cruz project, if it's one I'm familiar with, the reason it was cost-effective for them to do pre- and post-monitoring was the size of the project. It's a much bigger area and a much larger quantity, whereas in this case, it's a smaller quantity and a one-time thing that makes it not cost-effective.
And so that's sort of a separate area, and the quantities are actually not quite large out there. They're relatively small. I think on the order of 3,000 to 5,000 yards typically a year, but they've accumulated more than that because it's been quite a while since they had dredged the area. So I think you may be mixing sort of the overall concepts. And what has happened in their back bay dredging, the part that they're actually getting, I think they're now permitted. They originally were permitted for 3,000 yards, and they got they seemed to be working out well after spending about $200,000 on studies. They were able to go to 10,000 yards. And now, you know, so they're basically step-by-step proving that they're not doing harm and, in fact, doing good with their studies and getting some acceptance. But so that's the kind of process we would probably, you know, might have to look at, and it doesn't sound very appealing to me.
Rick, another question. Is there any possibility of mixing these finds with the dredged materials from the channel dredging that the Corps of Engineers does and the combined mixture of fines and sand might meet the standard? Is that a, or is that just too complicated? Getting state and federal agencies.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mr. Anderson. And we talked about that with the agencies, and they weren't too enamored by it. That's sort of that concept of dilution isn't the solution, and. They wanted us to continue with these analyses and options. So it's possible that through further negotiations and discussions during the subsequent permitting process that may resurface. But
by combining the two projects, if that was possible, and, you know, stirring it up and making it a passable solution.
It's a very sensible concept. The net tidal hydrology and sedimentation analysis. Philip Williams and Associates helped us with that, and they were tasked with looking at the physical conditions within and adjacent to the marina, identifying the physical processes, looking at historical photographs, identifying the location of Troll Creek and its alignment adjacent to the marina prior to construction, identifying historic rates of sedimentation, the marina current rates, and projected future rates of sedimentation based on the depth that it would be dredged, as well as the configuration or conceptual configuration of the marina.
We have a question.
I have a question to ask. I'd like to back up a second. Have you done any comparisons? You know, they're going to put these spoils on trucks and take them to a landfill, and if the landfill doesn't need the spoils, they're going to charge you by the ton. And they have a certain distance those trucks have to travel. Have you done any comparisons for leasing a dump barge and having a towboat take it outside to like 200-300 fathoms? That's all fine silt out in the bottom out there.
Are you suggesting taking it out just west of Port Bay up?
Out 200-300 fathoms, 400?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's really not permissible because there's not an approved offshore disposal site off the central coast. The closest approved offshore disposal site is off the coast of Southern California. And to permit to...
Thank you.
John? Chris, do you have any idea how many truckloads we're talking about? I mean, I assume it's going to be kind of a liquidy kind of stuff, so a 10-yard truck, you could probably maybe put like 5 yards in it?
Yeah, it's a large number of trucks.
That's 10,000 trucks.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of load.
Yes, it is.
And I'm sure the State Park Road can't handle that, so you got to repave the road.
There's been some discussions with state parks on that road.
It's in fine shape.
This slide here just presents tidal fluctuations within the bay based on empirical data. This slide shows tides within the marina August 5th and 6th, 1987, versus Sputnik again. One thing that PWA concluded is that the tides in the marina are essentially the same as the tides within the bay. This is just background information that they were collecting.
How long of an analysis did they have to do to come up with that?
Cost a lot of money to discover?
I think that was 15 minutes. Fortunately, they did more. This slide just looks at flood elevations in the marina, and the objective was to identify the FEMA 100-year floodplain so that during design of the upland facilities that take into account the flood stage elevations and make sure that the base footings of those buildings are above the flood stage. This aerial photograph shows the marina during construction or just after it was constructed. And the important thing that PWI concluded, 37, 57, 72, and 2005, and kind of three or four things that they identified that are key. One is that, well, the first one shows the marina, before the marina, existing conditions prior to the project was originally constructed. But the first thing they assessed was that Troll Creek, over time, it's when it enters the bay, it's not working anymore. It enters the bay in a much southern location than it did before. And that over time, it has deposited sediments into the back bay and created these berms and intertidal mudflats, little islands. And at its current state, shown in 2005, the creek actually, its location where it comes into the back bay, it's much further south. And that those berms and islands, and especially the western berm, which is sort of the tip, is at the most northern latitude, those are a hindrance for boaters to get in and out of the marina. But at the same time, those areas provide protection of the marina from wind wave erosion, and actually reduce the rate of sedimentation into the marina. So this is just a summary of their assessment. And I'm not going to read all of these, and I don't know if I'll read any of them. But the western bar, the last one, western bar prohibits direct access to the main channel of the Morro Bay, but shelters the marina from wind wave erosion. This slide right here, this is based on some bathymetry data that was previously. And the different color gradations show the depths of the marina on the different sediment or the station locations. And they just broke the marina up into these different quadrants. And the reason for doing this, is I'll show later, is to be able to identify, based on these different quadrants and the different sediment sampling stations, what the physical composition is within those different quadrants and what the volume and percentage of sands and fines would be based on a given dredge depth of each of those quadrants. Their conclusion, based on historical analysis, there's higher rates of sedimentation in the western half than the eastern half, and we would expect that the average depth in the marina is pretty shallow.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And that sources of sedimentation are from slumping from when it was originally constructed, that the slopes may have been too steep, and that there's some slumping, the deposit material in the marina, from natural tidal sedimentation processes, wind rate, wave erosion, and discharge of runoff in the eastern half. If you look at the eastern half of the marina, there's these corrugated metal pipes, and some of them actually have rusted through, but that is a source for sedimentation into the back marina as well. Hmm. This slide shows historic rates of sedimentation in the marina. And the next one shows what they project the advanced maintenance dredging requirements would be based on projected rates of sedimentation. And to project what the rates of sediment, or to estimate what the future rates of sedimentation would be based on dredge depth, is PWA has done a lot of modeling within the bay, and they used that prior work that they had done, as well as some other models or work estimates later. We're incorporating a maintenance dredging component into the project description of the document. So not only does the document assess the impacts associated with the dredging and the renovations and improvements to the upland facilities, but it also includes, at a programmatic level, this maintenance dredging component, so that down the road, when the city wants to conduct advanced maintenance dredging, they'll be able to tear off of this document and not have to go through this whole process again, that they should be able to just tear off of it and do something fairly quick and streamlined to get subsequent approvals down the road.
So could you explain, I'm looking at this where it says predicted maintenance dredging, just what does this chart mean? I mean,
it means that
let's start with the minus eight feet.
Sure.
And then we go over and we say low, I guess it's 100 milligrams per liter.
Correct. This isn't an exact science, even though we'd almost expect it to would be, but these are kind of high, medium, or low estimates of what the futures, what the rate of sedimentation would be.
So this is what you would expect to find in the murkiness of the sediment is suspended in the water, or is
it's based on wind wave erosion. It's based on the tidal hydrology or tidal hydrodynamic processes within the bay, the concentration or level of suspended sediments, and the depth that the marina is dredged. That they project that if you were to dredge to minus eight, that it would fill in to a minus four level in 34 years.
Depending on how deep you go, that you may have to not have to do maintenance. Now, there may be areas, as we see a bulge, and maybe it is a very nice tool that we could potentially go back and use this information and say, want to do some spot maintenance and not have, should that one bulge area that build back in if we're able to dredge at. But the bottom line is that it, and confirmed by, since the, marina was constructed in the 50s and generally probably, well, let's just say that the study shows that if we were to dredge, I think it was 10 feet, it would be somewhere in the range of 25 to 35 years life on that. So that sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And the excuse me, sir.
What or who would determine the difference between an 8, 10, or 12-foot level of dredging? Is it the cost, or simply the cost, or are there other factors?
Well, the cost of dredging from a minus 8 to a minus 12 or 10, that's based on cost. There'd be additional truck trips at those, the deeper depth you go. The other factor is that there'd be a larger number of truck trips, which would result in a higher number of, or a greater number of air quality emissions and things like that. So there could be greater impacts. In my opinion, the value of this analysis and information is that, as you can see here, that the deeper you dredge, the longer time frame in which the city has to do it again. So that justifies dredging to a deeper depth. Mm-hmm. So it's good information to justify a deeper dredge depth. And one thing I think I articulated earlier is that the EIR, EIS, it's an feasibility analysis of different alternatives. And the primary difference between an EIR and an EIS, all of the impacts for the different alternatives at the same level of detail. So it's quite exhaustive.
I'd like to ask a question.
Sure.
If this were to be accomplished at 8, 10, or 12 feet, I'm not as familiar with the situation as I once was, but as soon as you leave the marina, as this last picture indicates the scope of the project, and you round the point by the museum, there's a great distance between there and where the Corps of Engineers channel maintenance ends. And as I remember, there's some pretty shallow areas between the marina and the maintained channel. Rick, isn't that going to be a problem? I mean, we could have a nice lake back there, a saltwater lake for boats, and they wouldn't be banging on the bottom, but they still might not be able to get to the ocean.
And what is that part of your later presentation you want me to try?
Well, that's not part of mine.
Okay. So yeah, obviously it would be wonderful if we could include in this project dredging all the way to the designated federal channel at Fairbanks Point, because there is a naturally scouring channel that meanders there. And, of course, everybody knows who uses that, that you have to watch pretty carefully. It's gotten narrow, but it seems, well, almost sure, and I think this actually there's some discussion even on that, that that naturally scouring channel is not going to go away. All that water, at least in our lifetimes, and certainly the range of this project, that that channel will always exist. It may meander, it will, but it will scour. So the it did not seem practical to, we're having a hard enough time shaping up a, any kind of reasonable markings out there, but we will dredge. The project now does go out to at least meet the natural scour channel.
And that natural scouring channel is passable. It's it takes a knowledgeable boatsman, but it's passable. Okay, good.
That's my feeling. You have to be tide sensitive. You will have to be tide sensitive, but you know, this is probably not your optimum place where you design a marina in today's modern environment. But then again, there won't be any new marinas in today's modern environment.
These two pictures just show sources of that sedimentation that we talked about, the Back Bay, Troll Creek, as well as erosion and slumping from berms. And in particular, the upper left-hand photo shows kind of the small little intertidal mudflat that's developed within the marina on the southern edge, caused by natural physical processes. Findings, dredging deeper will maximize the life of the marina. There's been a decline in the Chor Creek sediment supply, which is actually decreasing the rate of sedimentation, which is a good thing. Sedimentation would occur at first following dredging, followed by a slower rate of sedimentation. Philip Williams and Associates, based on their analysis, has come up with this preliminary marina design. The aerial photos from approximately 2003. Was taken by the National Estuary Program. Key points is, one is they're not recommending cutting into that western berm. And even though it creates a passage difficulty, their assessment is three things. One, that it provides wave protection. They came up with is side slopes. Based on some discussions, the northern portion of the marina would be rock revetment, it would be improved, whether the southern portion would remain in a, sort of a natural state. Based on that, they're recommending a combination of 5-to-1 slopes and 3-to-1 slopes, that in the entrance to the marina would be 5-to-1, and then as you move inward, the northern portion would be 3-to-1 because of the rock revetment, but then on the southern portion, it would be 5-to-1. And in a 5-to-1 slopes, you know, that kind of reduces your capacity within the marina, and there's, you know, passage difficulty. So again, that's another issue that's undergoing further discussion at this point. Based on the footprint that they've recommended and the side slopes, as well as the review of those stations I showed you, that really kind of colorful figure, and the sediment data, these are the percentages and quantities of material that would have to be dredged to attain a certain dredge depth. And it's presented at it's the most left column identifies the elevation, mean low water, and then the volumes of the material, i.e. gravel, sand, and silt. And then it's an incremental volume and a cumulative volume and the percentage of sands and silts. And the thing you notice, you know, we're looking at almost 100,000 cubic yards of material, and we're still looking at a high percentage of
when you say incremental volume, what is an incremental volume?
Okay, so let's say if you had 3 feet to 1, there's no dredged spoils volume that would be generated. But as you go to low water.
Yeah, what does mean low water mean?
Oh, I think it's the average lowest low tide based on, I don't know, how many years of data collection. So there being two tidal.
Where would that fall in the tide book, Rick?
Would you ask that again, please?
Yeah,
plus Gene 1 foot tide.
Okay. Yeah.
Gene. Okay.
Yeah.
Zero or one.
Thank you. So I have another table I think kind of complements this one. So that we have the three action alternatives, -8, -10, and -12, but the EIR EIS also has to look at a no action alternative for a comparative basis. So the -8 dredge depth alternative We're looking at approximately 54,000 cubic yards, of which 84% would be fines. And as we get to a minus 12 feet elevation, we're looking at approximately 70% fines.
I have a question. Can we dig a hole somewhere and take out good sand?
You have one over in La-
and put the fines in the little
hole? You have one over in Los Osos.
Yeah. Or can, does the golf course need any sand traps? I mean,
it's a lot.
Look outside the rocks here.
Oh, look, how large is that parking lot?
Not big enough.
Well, you got goes down the full length of it, then around the corner where they don't park it, but there's some flats right there.
Do you want me to maybe so where we are really with the project, and we'll get to AP here before too long and let them talk. I think a lot of people are probably really interested, too, in the present maintenance and what we're doing. But these are somewhere between 50 and 100,000 yards, depending on how extensive you may, how extensively you dredge the basin and what to depth and to what depth. So that the most practical, real alternative for those of you who have become pretty skeptical that this will ever happen, I don't blame you, but I'm more optimistic than not that if we keep plugging along, we may be able to develop some reasonable options that could potentially even be put out to bid, where a contractor could be given the opportunity to find a private property site where the material could be taken. And if that could be done, the private sector might be able to, you know, work that out in a way such as that the trucking might be reasonable, and then we would have the opportunity to potentially award the contract, you know, depending on the unit cost at 8, 10, or 12 feet. And so hopefully I gave you some hints there of how we see this potentially shaping up. Obviously, too, if you think about it a little, the only way this would really work, to answer your question, what got me on this is, you know, we explored the idea, too, of trying to fill that area, raise the parking lot, all has complications, and in the end, you only really can put about 15,000 yards there. It doesn't solve your problem. So what the only practical way is to set up a staging area where the material could be probably dried for trucking and handled in one, say, the I guess that would be the southerly or easterly third of the parking lot, for example, where it could be cofferdammed or somehow set aside, handled in trucking, and probably the contractor would have to go at this quite slowly, which might work out well. You know, we're doing areas. Obviously, you have less displacement of people. So that is kind of how we see this going on the disposal site. It's not hopeless. It's proven to be very, even more difficult than one might ever guessed. Even we knew it was going to be hard, but that's what this—that's where this all these studies take us.
Yeah, but thank you, Rick. And the port, you know, this is a worthy endeavor. I mean, that marina is a valuable resource and asset for the city and the community. A couple more slides, and then I'm done. Two more minutes. EIR, EIS, we're about 90% done, and this slide here identifies all the important chapters and sections of the document. In particular, the project description, it's going to have a very lengthy section entitled Alternatives Removed from Further Consideration. So we've documented every option and alternative that we've addressed and that we've deemed to be infeasible. And we're including that in the document as important information for the reader and the regulatory agencies to show that we did our due diligence, we exhausted our research, and this is what's on the table. These are all the chapters. It includes both the dredging, the renovations and enhancements, as well as the advanced maintenance dredging component. The impacts, these are all the topical areas that are being addressed. There's about 12 of them. Typically, in a CEQA document, you can analyze up to 16 different ones. We went through an initial study process during release of the notice of preparation. We were able to scope it down from 16 to 12. We've gone through a lot of analyses is addressing the impacts to each of these resource areas based on the project description as it stands. Now, at this point, the city is undertaking a more of a refinement of that project description, refining the layout of the marina, looking at further detail and cover all the potential impacts and issues that could result of the project. Go through the completion of the document. This is going to take place next year. We target in springtime. We should have it out on the streets for both the public and the resource agents to review and ultimately conclude with hearings to certify the document. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much.
Any questions for Chris? I'll start with you, Lynn, but turn on your microphone if you... No? Ed?
Have you approached the Army Corps of Engineers to ask them about dredging offshore? I mean, dumping the dredge offshore here and making a designated area just for this project, maybe?
We have talked to them about that, and there was a number that was thrown out, how much it would cost to go through the environmental review and to get permits to establish an offshore site off the coast of the Central Coast, and it was quite big.
Yeah, and they're talking 5 to 10 years at best and multiple tens of millions of dollars for permitting a new offshore disposal site.
Roger?
No further questions. Thank you.
Jim? Jane?
So
I just think there's got to be some kind of simple solution here. It just seems like trucking it just is so out of the ballpark. It just, you know, we're talking about 10 to 20,000 trucks. I mean, that's a lot of truckloads here.
Yeah.
Well, I put this thing out before. It's probably a pie in the sky, and any reasonable person could prefer type barges.
Those guys, yeah.
And you could dredge out by, you know, where the blow sand is coming in, and that's pure sand. And it's just silting in up at the north end of the bay. And if you dredged, you put the two of them together, you would have the proper mix of fines versus grains. Have we ever even looked at this?
Well, you know, and we, of course, when the Natural Estuary Program's Habitat Restoration Study by the Corps of Engineers, a feasibility study, this was an option to, and we hoped to blend the projects. And in the end, to make a long story very short, is that is still a potential in their process. In fact, I think of all the in-the-bay options, really, that removing that material out by the sands, but the wind sand, the blown sand that is still alive, but barely. This is my interpretation, and we'll get corrected by NEP, but that project has not really moved in any kind of productive way toward that solution. So, you know, without them doing that part, I don't see it as a feasible solution either. So it just seemed that they were not able to go there.
Okay. I really want to allow the audience to question Chris if you have, but I'd like you to keep your questions to a question rather than making a long statement. So if you have a question for
3 to 5 years away, I'm sorry, but you know, we really haven't made time-wise much progress, probably.
And then a follow-up to that would be, if it did have to go to a landfill, one of those, what, in today's dollars, is there an estimate on what that would cost just for the trucking and maybe, and well, that part of it, the dredging and trucking? I mean, are we talking $5 million or $50
million? Somewhere between those two. No.
By the way, Jeff Davison, you're supposed to tell us your name.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Don Lockwood.
Jeff, we have roughly estimated the unit cost at $20 a yard, I think it was. And it... Yes, yeah, that would have, in theory, included trucking. Of course, it all depends on a lot of factors, and that was probably a relatively old. I mean, the way I think that we should approach this is that the State Parks has allowed us to invest your slip fees in doing this work, and we are trying really hard to see if we can do a feasible project, and I hope someday to get to a project where we can hopefully even potentially put it out to bid and see how we do in the bid process. And that's what we would like to do. You know, the other option is if we just can't get anything that looks even close to reasonable cost-wise when we get further along in this, then it may be that a fallback is we try some spot, limited spot dredging, you know, which may be able to go to near shore site, which, you know, in the order of 3 to 10,000 kind of go back to that level. But We're trying to do the bigger project now, and you know, I'm looking at a contractor in the business here, and he probably has his own ideas what it might cost.
Is it feasible to, seeing as we already have the permits for the harbor mouth, couldn't we just mix 50-50 with the dredgings there and do a private dredging at the harbor mouth and then take it to near shore? Because it seems like the near shore dump site is about the only feasible site, trucking it to Cold Canyon, even if they didn't charge a fee. You know, seems almost cost prohibitive.
Now, that's actually, I think if I understood what you said, that's an interesting idea. The permits for dredging the federally designated channels are obtained by the Corps of Engineers. So those are their permits for use of the nearshore site and for disposal, and they do the environmental work. But I think what you suggested was maybe you'd take material out of our marina and stop along the way and take a little of their sand with you to mix it up and get the right mix on it. The problem that Chris hinted at is that most of these agencies are quite difficult to coordinate, not because they're bad people, but it's just real hard to blend projects and agencies and, you know, with all their work. So it starts to feel like, you know, you're never going to accomplish that. But that's an interesting idea, and, you know, I think that we've decided, based on all the information we have gotten so far, that the best way to pursue now, the number one pursuit, is upland disposal, in hopes that we could shape up a project where a contractor might find a private site, site where it could be reused and therefore reduces cost to the extent where it might be feasible. And that's the way we're going to go now. But if that doesn't work out, we'll go back to trying to do some limited amount, probably in the nearshore site, with all our other options. Would that be kind of along the lines of what you're thinking, Chris?
And when the environmental agencies see that, they're going to see that, hey, you know, there's a lot of impacts associated with those options, and maybe that's going to make them think twice about the other, you know, this topic of blending, which really, you know, in all intents and purposes, is a win-win situation.
Yeah.
So we hire some really old, dirty trucks, and then they'd opt for.
Oh,
then,
boy.
Then we'd look good combining offshore.
Okay.
For those folks in the audience, I think Don does intend to open it up again after on the maintenance discussion, too, so this is probably just on the EIR phase.
Yes, it is. Thank you. Norm, did you have something, a question?
Yes, I do. My name is Norman Anton, and I co-chair the Morro Bay State Park Marina Boat Owners Association with Harold Hartzell. A question I have is, what's the feasibility of, and has it even been looked at, as to abandoning the marina where its present location is and reestablishing a new marina that would be close to the harbor entrance, maybe just inside? Maybe the dredgings coming out of there would be more like the dredgings that are being excavated now and would conform to that the dredger's removing right now, and would eliminate the problem of entirely of worrying about having to get rid of the dredgings on land. That's my question.
Well, you can see how quickly things silt in up there. We dredged over just in front of the yacht club down along the sand spit there, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Oh, longer than that, Don.
Everything gets really short.
Yes. I think that might even been 98 or 99.
Nah. 78. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Gene.
It had to be more than 3 years ago.
Anyhow.
Who can remember?
But it does silt in there quite rapidly. So, Rick, do we have an additional part to this?
No, we'll probably talk again a little bit in the end. Chris, are you pretty much? And I know Greg Smith has been in the audience for this whole thing from State Parks, but I think Greg is just here to answer questions and to listen. I appreciate him coming. Thanks, Greg. And I'd like to introduce Paul Gillen of Associate Pacific Constructors, who is our concessionaire on the site, the State Park Marinas and City's concessionaire.
Hello, I'm Paul Gillen, for those of you I've not had the chance to meet, but I bought the business from Reg Wibley, and since 2005, I've owned the business and have managed the operation and the marina. We've had quite a number of interesting changes since I got involved with it, mostly from the standpoint of understanding how the marina works and what the marina owners wanted to see change, and also what we could do with the available resources we had. First of all, we have undertaken quite a number of maintenance issues that the highest priority, such as safety issues. A lot of those pertain to the electrical, the water systems, tripping hazards, and I think we've done a pretty good job of getting those up to speed since 2005. We've also spent quite a bit of time, not only myself, but primarily Mike Sharp, listening to the owners, working with the association, and trying to facilitate as many of the upgrades that the tenants wanted as we could within our budget and our priorities. We still have a number of major maintenance issues to address this year and going into 2007. Our occupancy has pretty much been 100%. We have a waiting list in just about every size of dock except for the skiffs. We're pretty much about 50% occupancy on the skiffs, which is there's only 30 slots for those. I mentioned our waiting list. We are considering closing it. Most of the waiting lists now have over 20 individuals on the waiting list, and we're getting 3 or 4 calls a week for new people to get on the waiting list. We've expanded our kayak rental operation in the sense that we've teamed up with. Well, that's really what I have to say about the marina. Is there any questions I can answer? There's 123, including the one guest slip, which we keep open for guests at the state park that might have a boat on a trailer that they want to put in. And we limit that to a one-month rental.
Ed? Roger? Jim?
Paul, what responsibility does the person who rents the kayaks have for the marina in general, if any?
That rents the kayaks, I mean, at our little rental shop?
Yeah. Does that individual have any responsibilities beyond renting the kayaks?
No.
No.
No. I mean, he signs a waiver, and that's pretty much it. He's responsible to bring the kayak back, but nothing. Yeah. I don't know. What's that question?
Well, he's not, in a sense, the resident marina manager or anything of that sort.
No.
So he's your employee. He's an employee of APC, yes. And I guess
right. Yeah. Is that
is he the one that fields the problems of owners who have boats in the marina? Or
no, that'd be Mike Sharp.
Okay.
In terms of yeah, okay. The kayak rental person is strictly there to handle the kayak renting. He does have some maintenance responsibilities. Those, however, are being directed by Mike Sharp. He's
okay.
Overall responsible.
Okay. Thank you.
Gene?
Well, for years I've heard problems about the electrical down there, but you feel comfortable that it's pretty well up to snuff now?
It's not. From an overall safety standpoint, it is.
Yes.
Up to snuff. We brought an outside consultant, I believe it was last year, who did a complete evaluation of the systems, and that started right from the main power box. He gave us...
Thank you very much.
Well, can I just get a jump in a little bit before he goes away? You'd probably just like to sit down and go home. But so I'd like to talk a little bit about the major maintenance program that you're under now, too. But also, just so everybody understands, there are limits certainly to the electrical. Electrical is a good example. We're going to, all the services are quite old, being installed originally probably in the 50s to the marina. Water service, electrical service is a good example. There is really not proper service even to the head of the ramps, although, but so that major services, all the major services would be renovated as a part of our dredging rehab project and all the site planning. When we end this, we're going to talk a little bit about what we're doing, some planning to try and identify those things. So within, you know, Paul and AP have to work within, they're sort of in a box of, you know, they're trying to keep things moving along at the slips. Of course, they can't do the major services in drainage, electrical, any of that stuff. But could you tell us where you are now? 15% of gross is to be set aside per the concession agreement every year for major maintenance. You're responsible for daily housekeeping, but this is a special set-aside. We've, by mutual agreement, followed past practice, and you give us a two-year program. The current two-year program started January 1 of this year. We'll continue into next year. And I think if you could explain for everybody where you are with that proposal, I think it's, well, I'll let you say.
Okay. Yeah. This, in fact, we've changed 15% budget based on current revenues. And at that time, that was $81,000 that would have been allocated for major maintenance over the next 27 months. And at that time, we identified four major items in the maintenance budget, which we went over with Rick. These were established based on safety priorities or input from the tenants as issues that we could include in the major maintenance. I could go over those. I mean, we have... Did you want me to go over the items?
If you could, real quick. I didn't put that in the packet, so maybe you could just cover it real quickly.
Okay. You know, we have power centers that need to be added to three of the docks. We have rewiring of some of the existing circuits. We got new transformer covers. We actually have docks at 3 and 4. There's four fingers that need replacing. Those are safety issues. They're unstable. And then we have the kayak dock storage area, which is in need of repair. So although we established this budget based on these priorities, we are now in the process of fine-tuning these and maybe reestablishing some of the funds and allocating them accordingly. And we keep fairly accurate accounting of all of this and for the Coast Guard docks. And that was...
So the way this works, and I think this has been some folks have... The way this works is AP makes a proposal to us for a major maintenance plan over the next 2 years in advance, estimating revenues, and they tell us how they want to spend it, and we take a look at it. And in this case, I think they've done a better job with trying to get feedback from the tenants and addressing priorities. And so we said, great, go forward and do it as they can do it, and it's based on crew availability and material availability and things like that. They will accomplish that work over 2 years, and then when it's done, they will give us an accounting, and we will make sure that, you know, they expended the funds based on actual material costs, actual labor costs, or in some cases, actual, you know, recent bid was the way it used to be done. I haven't seen it since Paul. I don't think since Paul's owned it, we haven't really, you know, seen one of these yet, I don't think. So, but we will make sure it's based on actual costs, and there always is some little, you know, they claim to have overrun in costs, or they've not quite matched up what should have been spent, so we carry that over. So hopefully I'm clear enough. I'm trying to explain for you and the public how this works, because it has been an area of some controversy and allegations that the money was not enough money was spent as actually was supposed to be. So Paul is also, I think AP is now in the process of doing some of those float work, because you've acquired some floats that are down there now, right?
Right. We're getting ready to start that in the next month.
Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping he go forward, takes care of all these priorities, and at the end of next year, he's going to give me a full report. We'll have that, and we'll match it up to actual revenues that he's reported. And hope.
It is because this is the State Park Marina update. I'm going to allow members of the audience to come up and make a statement. I don't want questioning either Mike or Paul. I want you to come up. If you have something to say, say it, and so that you can give the Harbor Advisory Board the information that we need, and also Paul and Mike will be listening. And so I'm opening it up now for the audience. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Is that Don Lockwood?
Jeff Davidson now. I want to say that in the last year or year and a half, things have improved at the marina. And sure, there's some docks there and some slips that need replacing, and it's a slow process. But Mike has done a tremendous job in talking to us and fixing the big problems. I happen to be on a dock, which is pretty nice, and so that's great. But I think for the most part, things get fixed as best they can. One problem is that you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. And it's a worn-out marina, and I think they're doing the best they can.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, I'll bring it back to the board and see if any questions, answers, observations.
And while he's doing that, maybe I'll just say, you know, the council has directed us. This is all worked out with state parks, and council authorized execution of the concession agreement. We're all working on this direction of the city, and we're doing the best we can. It's a tough project, you know, and I don't know what else to do but just keep plugging along and go where it takes us until we, you know, at some point we either get to a project where we think, okay, we've got a plan, and we'll try to put this out to bid, or we throw up our hands and say it's just not doable. I, that's all I can do. So if the board wants to, you know, this is not an act. It's listed, I think, and under an action item. There's no action recommended other than, you know, the implication is that we're just going to keep trying. Mm-hmm. And the money is generally, I think, and we, you know, it's money that we received under the operating agreement from the concessionaire AP is being spent on the EIR. So it's, other than a lot of, you know, our staff time, we're not out of pocket for it. And so that's the general overview. Thanks, Greg.
Greg Smith, Sector Superintendent, California State Parks. When the city took over the operation of the marina, it was like a weight lifted off our shoulders. Unfortunately, this is the only state park marina in the state, and our training isn't such that it allows us to operate it in the most efficient way. Having gone to an operating agreement with the city and with Rick specifically, and the follow-up with Paul and Mike here, and also the Boat Owners Association, I would have to say things in the last grant, and we've been doing our part up in the resources agency, making sure this grant keeps moving forward. It's a legislative action. We're working with the legislators, and the teamwork that goes into this says a lot for getting this grant moving forward, and I'd just like to thank and compliment everybody involved in it. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Greg. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to do that.
We, you know, there's been a little controversy recently, too, and maybe we better say something for the public. We also got another little deal from DBW. Thank goodness they're still very supportive, Department of Boating Water, very supportive of trying to do this project, and they saw, along with us, that it would be real helpful to do some additional site planning and even some marine engineering on the basin when we identified, got further along with the identification of issues. So they gave us another $70,000 last year to kind of feed the process outside of the EIR, and that has got us we hired RM Local Planning Firm to do some better site planning. Part of that was required hiring a surveyor to do an extensive survey, identify all the utilities, all the physical improvements there, and included large trees and shrubs. As a part of that survey work, he actually marked with some paint on chalk some of the trees there, especially the large ones. And I think he was doing that only to get them in the survey. But apparently some people interpreted that as marking those trees for potential cutting down. And so we caused a little controversy for state parks, and I apologize to him for that. Those are not marked. They're white. They're not red marks. They are not marking for those trees are not there. In fact, sort of the opposite. That was when we first got into this with state parks in 2000 or 2001, there's another state agency called Department of Boating and Waterways that actually, they have a capital outlay program, and it's a fairly unique program for state-owned facilities, boating facilities. So there aren't a lot of those. There's some inland lakes and stuff, but this is pretty much, I might be the only one on the coast, or there's rare on the coast, certainly. So we have been working with them, and that's Greg's reference to a capital outlay project that we've talked about that is in the process in Sacramento. It actually takes a legislative act in this particular program, and we have their cooperation and approximately $6 million. So we think that there's pretty good chance that we could obtain that funding since it is dedicated boating waterway, boating funding. It is not general fund of the state, wouldn't affect tax. It's actually funded from boater gas tax is where this source comes from, and it's dedicated to state-owned property. So we've got a nice little place, and it seems to be, and State Parks is doing their part. DBW keeps it in mind. We need to get the project along a little further before it can get out of general service, get to a level where the legislature can actually act on it. So we've been delayed to some extent, but it's still out there.
Thank you. Norm, if you'd like to have the last word, that's fine.
I read an article in the newspaper the other day. I'm probably most of you are aware of it. And I believe the surveyor's name is Jim Wood.
Wood.
That we could find a way to address a haul-out facility for this area. It would be a tremendous move with the fact that we're the only safe harbor between Santa Barbara and Monterey.
Norm. You're preaching to the choir at this point.
Okay.
this is an ongoing project that the Harbor Advisory Board has been pushing and trying to get in there. But I'd like to point out that is not on the agenda at this point in time.
Okay.
So we'll have to.
All right. And then I wanted to just make one addition, and that is when I listened to the report from Padre, frankly, I found it discouraging. I know I'm not supposed to get discouraged, but when I hear that there's no place to put dredgings that are feasible, it does sound discouraging. And I urge the board to please make every effort to try to find a way to avoid losing the marina, because we've got 120 boats there with no place to go, as you all are aware. So
we're aware of that, Norm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm bringing it back to the board now. Anybody wishing to make any additional comments?
Well, I don't know. I got one. I don't know how feasible this would be, but over at the old Duke Power Plant, between where this building is, go right and look over the side over here. If they wanted to put it in there, getting them to do it would be a different story. And I don't know how the city would like all the trucks going through the middle of Morro Bay, but of the city. But take a look at that place.
Okay. Jim, you had a...
I've heard that there was a plan on the part of someone to... do some upgrade or remodeling of the one restroom that is available to the State Park Marina. Does anybody know if that's true or not?
Greg, you're on the hot seat, I think.
OK. Hey, Greg Smith, State Parks. Are you talking about the restroom, the historic one on the other side of State Park Road, just inside the campground?
I was speaking of the one by the Bayside Cafe.
Well, you're correct on both of them. The historic one is in the last stages of renovation. They're painting it this week, and we're hoping it'll be open in 2 weeks. The other restroom is due for... I'm sure the city of Morro Bay is aware of Americans with Disability Act issues, ADA issues. The state parks got sued on that, and part of the settlement was that we would upgrade a lot of our facilities, and that restroom is actually scheduled for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very well. I'm calling that action item closed, and we'll move on to the next action item, which is cancellation of the January 2007 Harbor Advisory Board meeting. And I'll entertain a motion to that effect.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I'm not voting because I won't be here.
So it passes.
Okay. You can even ask Polly questions if you want.
Yeah, let's ask Polly a question.
Okay, then we will consider that the department status report is closed.
I would like to ask about the new vehicle, the hybrid vehicle.
Right.
You replaced a vehicle you've had for 327 years or something. That old
it was perfectly good.
Yeah, it was that old Ford van that was kind of the rust liner on the roof. The roof was threatening to come off like old Manuel did. So, yeah, it was pretty leaky. So anyway, we replaced it with a hybrid, and we actually got that third of it paid for with the USDA Homeland Security grant. And so it's a nice, really nice vehicle, actually, I have to say, and wonderful.
And didn't you ever hear of duct tape? I mean, just because you had a little rust, the duct tape works.
You didn't see that because we painted over this.
Okay. Okay, additional comments? Oh, we have one.
I'd like to thank you, Don, for all of your hard work all these years. You will be missed, and thank Catherine for the cookies tonight.
Yeah,
those were delicious. So, no, but seriously, I know I speak from my heart and saying that I think you've been a valuable asset on this board. You're a boater. You've mm-hmm. known the shortcomings of the harbor. You've important voice there. So I will miss you here.
Thank you. Without any other comments, future agenda items, we have a list of them that Rick has proposed. For the February meeting, election of the chair and vice chair, parking management plan, ice making machine update, proposed newspaper rack ordinance, and we'll look forward to seeing what Jim has come up with, Jim and Rick, on that one, and a presentation by Pilaris. I have no idea.
It's a new Central Coast Women's Fisheries Group, and... You know, when I prepared the packet, I wasn't aware of this, I don't believe, but I am told that the mayor is, as a part of being reelected, is trying to agendize in January a priority-setting workshop for January, February for the city. So there may be an opportunity coming up for the board to express, again, your priorities. Typically, we have worked on that in the budget process, too, in February or March, as we review with you. We have a new finance director, so I'm not going to promise exactly what the budget schedule will be right now. She hasn't put anything out. But in years past, we always reviewed the priorities that the board set and capital projects, and then we come back with budget about March, April, May. So that's down the road. But anyway, there may be an opportunity, and I'll try to keep you informed, and you might watch also as if the city council is to discuss priorities for the city. It could be more policy-type priorities. I'm not sure, but... So that's in the works.